Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Content Clearinghouse. I'm Josh Evans.
And I'm Brett Chisholm.
And on today's episode, we talk about spaceships of all shapes and sizes. Long, skinny ones, and short, hockey puck-esque ones. Seriously, it's like a tuna fish can. And after that, Brett fills me up with existential dread by talking about a movie studio that deals in existential dread that masquerades under a thin veneer of children's entertainment. Pixar. Then Brett inverts my way of thinking with the film Inside Out.
Movies, shows, and video games, podcasts, books, and their acclaims. Let their favorite content become yours. It's the Content Clearinghouse. Content Clearinghouse.
And it starts right now.
Brett, how are you?
I'm good, except I need to make an immediate correction of an egregious error I made on our last show.
Oh, really? All right, lay it on me.
So I actually probably made several errors. This isn't the most scientifically accurate podcast in history. But one
We're
of the
contentologists,
errors,
in case anyone was wondering, not scientists.
So I last week said that the Quaker is from Holland. But I noticed, since recording the last show, that Bree has been saying our Quaker, Mando, is from the Netherlands. Now, I noticed this. I asked her about it. Is the country Holland or is it the Netherlands? So her thinking was that the full name of the breed is the Nederlandse Quakerhondje. But it turns out, I looked it up, Holland is just a few provinces within the country, the Netherlands, and I'm not alone in wrongly thinking that they're just interchangeable terms. The Netherlands is actually dropping the Holland nickname from all official branding because it confuses tourists and it encourages visitors to explore more than just Amsterdam. So there you go. It is the Netherlands.
Well, now I know how your week has gone. You've probably been stressing this all week. I'm glad you got that off your chest, Brett.
Yeah.
And now we know that you're just some dingus of an American. I don't even know where the Netherlands are.
I think we knew that. We've known that for a long time. So how you been?
Well, that's great. I've been good, man. Just been enjoying, and by enjoying, I mean hating the cold weather that's rolled in here. That's really, it's really cutting into my outside fun. But other than that,
it's
going to
be 4
great.
Degrees here. There's no one wheeling happening right now.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty rough. How you guys staying warm in your little condom of a house?
the Airstream.
Yeah.
You mean the Magnum XL, the silver
bullet?
That's
exactly what I meant. Yeah. The Rough Rider.
The Sterling spaceship. After I think 5 previous winters, we've full-timed in our travel trailer in wintry conditions, and we've almost always had to be winterized, essentially, which means we don't have running water and we could use our black tank, which is the toilet. It's a little bit roughing it. It means winter time we were kind of restricted to campgrounds where we had like running water and facilities nearby. This winter, we're just like, we're not having it. We're getting the puppy. We're living full time. We're not like traveling for work. We're stationary. So we skirted the Airstream. We put a industrial piece of cloth.
That makes it semi-permanent, doesn't it?
I mean, it's removable, but it definitely makes
it. It ain't home until the wheels come off.
Yeah. I mean, it's. Oh, man. Grab some cinder blocks. We're calling this home. That's terrible. No, so a little space heater underneath the Airstream with it skirted, like we're solid. Like we got full running water. We're living like humans, like modern day Homo sapiens with a shower and a flushing toilet. So it's pretty fantastic. So yeah, we hold
all
up great.
All the amenities.
Man. All the amenities.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's great.
That's great.
God, we
well,
even have
good.
A
I'm glad that you'll
Christmas
be warm.
Tree.
Yeah, a little travel size.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So I was talking to one of my friends that listens to the podcast, Wiley. Shout out to Wiley. And He said that he loves the show, but he thinks that we talk about One Wheels a little bit too much. So, in honor of Wiley, I decided to do an entire off-top today about One Wheels.
What? That sounds amazing.
Yeah, you wish, Brett. That's a lie. Oh. I'm not doing that. I think we get plenty of One Wheel chat in just the fact that we talk about it all the time. Everybody knows what a One Wheel is.
We've already talked about it like three times.
Yeah, I know. No, what I want to talk about today for the off-top is this amazing piece of online artwork that I found. And since this show is all about like sharing the things, the content that we love, and this is like, I'd say this is kind of like borderline content. It's more like content appreciation artwork. But it's this.
You mean CAA?
Exactly, yeah. Put that down into the glossary of content clearinghouse words and acronyms that we've invented. So this CAA, this is something that's been floating around. Like, I've had this on my phone for years now, and every once in a while I'll open it up and check it out. But it's a giant sci-fi ship size comparison poster by this artist on DeviantArt named Dirk Loschel. And this is a piece of artwork that I've sent to you, but it's a project.
Oh, this is what you texted me the other day. I'm pulling it up right now. It is un-freaking believable. I've seen this before too. I think I found this on Reddit a few years back.
This is one of the coolest things I've ever found on the internet. This is like the reason the internet exists. It's this project that Dirk Loschel was working on for years. The most current image says that it was last updated in 2014. And one of the articles that I found referencing it is 7 years old, talking about the project. But that doesn't make it any less applicable today than it was when he created it. And this poster it's gigantic. It's 4,268 by 5,690 pixels. And if you don't speak pixels, that is gigantic, especially in print resolution. It's like full-size poster, 14 by 20, something like that.
Wow.
So when you look at it on a computer screen, it's gigantic. And it's kind of become this legendary piece of online artwork. And it's amazing that this thing is available for full download. If anybody wants to see this, you can just go to the link that we will share today, check out what we're talking about. And if you wanted to go all out, go to Kinko's and have a gigantic poster printed up, it's available for that.
It's but not going to fit the Airstream, unfortunately.
No, you have to roll it up. You could print it out like a business card size. But the essentially what it is, it's hundreds, possibly even thousands of spaceships from all different sci-fi properties. And it is all done to a scale of 1 pixel to 10 meters. So up in the left-hand corner in a little yellow box, there's the real world reference point. It's the ISS, and it's about 100 meters across. So on this poster, it's 10 pixels. It's almost completely invisible. I had to search, even though I knew where it was, it still took me a couple of minutes to find the ISS as the scale. But then as you start moving down, you start seeing like ships from Star Wars property, and then ships from Warhammer, ships from, there's a ship from WALL-E on here, stuff from Stargate, like all these properties, pretty much anything you can imagine. And it's the scale of this thing is like, it's almost mind-boggling. It's hard to wrap your brain around how much work this guy has put into collecting all of this artwork. What did you think when you first came across this?
I thought that Deviant Dirk is doing a great service to nerds like me. I'm actually looking for the WALL-E ship right now. I have not seen the WALL-E ship on here before. I think I see it. The
far left, all the way at the bottom.
Gotcha. That is a little bit applicable to what I'm talking about today. But
nice.
You know, one of the things that I thought when I saw this is that there is a lot of science fiction universes that I am not familiar with. You know, I've heard of Warhammer, or even there was like Monsters versus Aliens was one of them, which I think is an animated DreamWorks. I mean, there's like, I don't know, the there's so much content out there, and this is one of my favorite genres, and I still feel like I've barely scratched the surface, and it kind of gives me the same sort of existential dread that I want to fill you with on my content piece, but also just like an appreciation for all of the creators and the creator appreciators out there.
Well, if there's one thing that space should fill you with, it's existential dread.
Absolutely.
And that's like one of the coolest things about this is that this piece of art, it's something you really can get lost into, especially like viewing it on a computer screen. Like as you're zooming in to check out some of these smaller ships, it's almost fractal-like when you're diving into it, because you'll go past these like giant Titan class and Star Destroyers and zoom all the way into some of the ships that you're familiar with from Star Wars, like, you know, some of the Rebel Alliance cruisers, and you know, you're used to seeing them on screen as these gigantic ships, and you zoom in, you're like, oh, this thing is only, you know, 400 meters long, and compared to, you know, ships from other properties, it's almost like microscopic. And, you know, that really made me feel the scale of space when I realized that even like these massive iconic ships, when viewed on a cosmic scale, are almost just little blips. Like, it's like dust in the wind, essentially.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll ever if we'll survive long enough to build something that's like as big as some of these larger starships.
I have to start mining asteroids. It's like you have to be like cracking planets open to get this much material.
Yeah.
But one of the biggest ones on here is the Independence Day mothership. Clocks in at 24,000 meters, and when you view the poster at full size, it just absolutely dominates the page. And then some of the other huge ships are from EVE Online. They're these Titan-class battleships. And EVE Online is this MMORPG, this massively multiplayer online role-playing game, which I've never played it. But it's a game that's based on like space travel and battles, mining. And a big part of it seems to be like running these giant in-game corporations. And the only reason I know anything about EVE Online is because the game is known for deception and double crossing and these massive losses of in-game assets with like unbelievable real world value. Like the most expensive ship ever lost in EVE Online was valued at $11,000 in the real world. So this is a game that has like made headlines, not only for like these massive losses, but also because of the stories that have come out of like the battles. And it's really interesting that a game that, you know, you may have no interest in would still pop up on at least my radar. I've read about EVE Online on crack.com.
I was going to say that's when I first heard of EVE, because I never played it, but it always sounded like such an interesting concept. But it was a Cracked article about like a heist that cost somebody tens of thousands of dollars. And I was like, maybe I don't want to play this game.
And one of the reasons I never looked into it is because I don't have the time for another full-time job as an online space CEO, which is, it seems like if you go deep into EVE Online, that's what you get. But the story that you're talking about, the article that I was looking into for this, it was on PC Gamer. It's called Murder Incorporated, 10 Months of Deception for One Kill in EVE Online. It's the story of how this mercenary group known as the Guiding Hand Social Club painstakingly infiltrated the ubiquitous Serif Corporation, and they had the intention of assassinating the CEO, this player named Muriel. This was a contract that they had received from someone else. And over the course of 10 months, the Guiding Hand, they inserted spies into the board of directors, because that's apparently a thing in this game. And on the morning of April 18th, 2005, they executed this coordinated strike that not only took out the CEO, but it also resulted in all of the corporation's ship assets being stolen, and then also the destruction of the $11,000 Navy Apocalypse ship that was destroyed. And that's this is also reported in Forbes because just the massive loss of real-world currency that was associated with it. It's like such a crazy story. And if you look at this poster, which I pray all of you will. You'll see a lot of EVE Online ships. You'll see a lot of $11,000 assets on the poster. They kind of dominate the page, which is really cool.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I by the way, if you hear a little barking, that's Mando the space dog. He's a good boy.
Oh, sweet Mando.
But he's a little bit upset that the Navy class ship got destroyed. What a loss.
You know how dogs are. You know how much they care about the money of humans. So if you guys, if you don't normally check out our links, today would be a great place to start. The first link that we will share today is a direct link to this full-size piece of artwork by Dirk Loschel. Like, definitely check this thing out. If you're into this show, if you like sci-fi at all, you're going to love this piece of artwork. I saved it on my phone, and it'll pop up every once in a while. It's like a memory in my phone. Like, oh, yeah, I haven't looked at that thing in a while, and I'll go in and start obsessing over it. So it's worth your time. Check it out. Download it. Study it. And, you know, when this pops up, it brightens my day. So hopefully it's something that all you nerds out there in Content Clearinghouse land also find and enjoy.
Nerd power. Very cool, Josh. Yeah, thanks for bringing that story to my attention again.
Yeah, man.
I'll have to check out that article.
So what's on your content circuit right now?
Okay, so I listened to like a 3+ hour long Joe Rogan podcast. I haven't really been listening to his podcast lately. There's just a lot of other content. And frankly, I'm just busy with life and work and so forth. But, you know, when it comes to UFOs, I take it very seriously. It's important to stay up to date on the latest and greatest developments. And Jacques Vallée is somebody that's studied the phenomenon. He worked with, is another really well-known ufologist back in the day that was involved in the Blue Book Project. Is that what it was called?
That sounds right.
So, yeah, Project Blue Book. That's what it was. So, Dr. J. Allen Hynek was the person that I was thinking of that was started out a skeptic and then became a believer, and he was like a true scientist. Well, I really feel like Jacques Vallée has like some inside scoop, and yeah, it was a great interview. They were plugging him and his associate on the show were plugging a documentary called The Phenomenon, which I haven't gotten the chance to check out. But man, this every time I hear like credible current information about Tic Tacs or saucers or leaked footage, leaked documents, I mean, it just seems like stuff is happening. And God, I just love thinking about it. It's kind of like sci-fi for me. Like it's bringing sci-fi home because this is real life. Like I legitimately believe this is happening. And I think since the New York Times broke that article a couple years ago, like I think a lot of other people realize this is not science fiction. This is a reality. There's something happening.
I'd agree. Just think of how small their ships would look on Dirk Loschel's giant sci-fi ship size comparison poster, though, Brett.
Definitely not visible. A couple
less
other
than 1 pixel.
Yeah, a fraction of a pixel, and then they disappear forever. I do have 3 news stories too that I'm just gonna link to because I mean, news is not the kind of content we cover, but man. Sometimes when you're...
We do cover a lot of fiction, though, and you could almost say that news is fiction these
days.
Oh,
here we go. Here we go. Hot takes. So this, as far as I know, is... Actually, it's funny you say that. The third article, I'm not so sure it's true or real, factual. But so 3 things real quick. Performance art. Forrest Fenn's treasure, as you know, has been found, but the finder has revealed himself. And there's a gentleman that is writing a book right now about the Forrest Fenn treasure hunt. And he published an article. He got to interview the finder of the treasure. And so I'm going to link to an outside article. It's fantastic. Also, the Zodiac Killer's Unsolved Cipher that has not been solved after 51 years has now been solved by a amateur computer scientist, cryptographer. I think he's a professional computer scientist, but he's like an amateur code breaker. So that's a YouTube
video.
Like the
Zodiac's shopping list or something, grocery list.
It was just kind of some like insane ramblings of a serial killer that I don't think has been caught. But it's a very fascinating like 15-minute YouTube video that I'm going to link to. And then finally, you know about the monolith in Utah that like took the internet by storm? Recently, a gold monolith has now appeared, and it's the ninth monolith structure. So this is the one I'm not totally sure if it's real. Like, it's a Metro UK article. I am finding corroborating articles on the internet, but man, it really is difficult to like separate the wheat from the chaff, as some farmers might say when it comes to internet news.
Farmer talk, huh? Yeah, that is really interesting. Yeah, they're really like, that seems like it's a trend now. It's like maybe a mass art piece with the monoliths popping up. It's really interesting. And did you see the story about Andy Lewis, famous base jumper, tearing down the Moab monolith?
What?
Because
it was Andy Lewis? Sketchy Andy?
He put out a video and like a post about him and one of his friends tearing it down because they were like offended that the visitors were coming. Like, one of the issues they had is people were coming out there and shitting in the desert and not cleaning it up. So they like tore it down. A bunch of people were really mad about it, but that's kind of like Andy Lewis's brand, is like really controversial, like desert conservation. You know, he's always ranting about people misusing the country, you know, the BLM land. And so this is like right up his alley to do something like this. And people were really upset about it, but you know, he's like making a statement about people not messing the place up.
Yeah, you know, there's actually an Instagram account that's pretty controversial. I think it's called Public Lands Hate You. And I, you know, Bree and I follow a lot of activists on Instagram. I mean, we have spent, you know, I would say probably the majority of our time living in the silver bullet condom.
The Rough Rider.
On
no shocks
lands.
On that bad boy.
no shocks in here. We've been on public lands. Like, we volunteered for multiple state parks. Like, we really care about... we believe in the idea of public lands. Like, this is this collective treasure that we all fund and have agreed to protect, and we've like hired these government employees to take care of it, but also as kind of like part of that deal is we get to go enjoy it. And so you see it in various ways and in various organizations. But it's a difficult issue because you absolutely have these places that are stunning and pristine where they become like a Disney tourist experience almost. But without public lands and without that like deal that we've made, this like sort of societal agreement, we would have a Walmart there, or we'd have like a hotel. You know, if you go to Niagara Falls, It's a stunning feature, but all of the things around it, all of the colorful lights that project onto the falls and the hotels and the walkways and the shops and the, you know, all the crap, that would be at Yosemite. That would be at Yellowstone without
public
land. So it's, you know, it might be flawed, but I'll take it.
Quick question. When your Blackwater system stops functioning, where do you guys shit? Do you just leave it outside or what?
So there is another Instagrammer that actually has a fantastic tutorial on how to properly poop in nature. I can't remember his account offhand. It's a couple that... Idle Theory Bus. Idle Theory Bus. If I remember, I'll link to it in the show notes. But you have to dig a deep hole, and you have to keep it away from a water source, and you can't leave anything in the hole that has not already gone through your body. And I have done it. And
Brett
has
a plan.
You can do it properly. I don't like where the show's going.
This is the Brett Bowel Movement Hour.
Oh my gosh.
So, before we go to break, I do want to mention this. I was going to mention it at the top of the hour, but we had to clear up that Netherlands thing. So the Content Clearinghouse is going to be taking a little holiday break. This is going to be our last show of 2020. Hopefully it'll be the last of a lot of things of 2020. And we'll be back on January 7th, and hopefully the world will be just like perfect, back in order. There'll be no issues. And it's pretty much, those are my hopes for the new year, Brett.
We'll touch base then and we'll see how it's going.
Perfect. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and we will get into some content.
Ooh, content. Clear it out.
Welcome back to the Content Clearinghouse. Brett, I am so excited to hear what you got, man. I'm ready for you to fill me with existential dread.
You know it's coming. Our sweet little puppy is just gazing with his sweet, innocent eyes at me.
Is this going to just become the Brett talks about how cute his dog is show? I could get behind that for a few weeks, actually.
Okay, well, when we retire the one wheel, we got to come up with a new hook for the show. So I'm going with puppy talk.
All right.
So, Josh, you might have heard of a little filmmaker called Pixar Animation Studios.
I'm very familiar with their work. I have two children.
Well, excellent. In an effort to appease our less savvy listeners, Pixar Animation Studios, more commonly known as Pixar, is a California-based subsidiary of the Walt Disney Company, that first started in the 70s as part of the Lucasfilm computer division before it became its own enterprise in the 80s with funding from Apple co-founder Steve Jobs. Pretty interesting
history. Is that
really that old? It is. Yeah.
Wow,
so,
I did not know that.
Now, do you have a guess on Pixar's valuation in 2006 when it was acquired by Disney? What they did is give Steve Jobs 2.3 shares of Disney stock for each share of Pixar stock. So you want to put like a money valuation, EV dollars, US dollars?
Billion dollars.
It's so close. So $7.4 billion.
Oh my God. Wow.
It actually made Steve Jobs the largest single Disney shareholder at the time. Now, Josh,
the man with the most turtlenecks in history.
I think he only had like two that he just rotated every other day.
Probably.
Yeah. So do you think Pixar was worth $7.4 billion?
It definitely is now. If it wasn't then, they were doing some very accurate forecasting because Pixar is like a total powerhouse in entertainment.
Absolutely. I think, hell yes it is, because I've got two cliches for you. You get what you pay for, and not all computer animation studios are created equal.
I've heard that last one a lot, actually.
Now, to the movie layperson or the cynical or, dare I say it, the non-contentologist, Pixar animated movies look like fun, animated, lighthearted fare for kids. But this could not be further from the truth. Toy Story, Wall-E, The Incredibles, Ratatouille, Coco, basically everything except Cars is something significant to offer to viewers. I'm not a Cars fan. But almost every one of Pixar's 22 films have depth, humor, emotion, drama, even some elements of horror and jump scares like in the latest Toy Story, Toy Story 4. And if the opening sequence of Up, now a cultural touchstone and sometimes referred to as Married Life, doesn't bring a tear to your eye, you might be a psychopath. These are honestly adult movies that are cleverly made to appeal to children as well. But we're not going to talk about these movies tonight, Josh. We are taking a magic school bus ride deep into the human mind.
All right.
We're going to let Pixar and Disney by proxy dismantle the popular myth that some soul or some spirit is guiding us from within. And instead, we're going to explore the scientifically accurate, but to some potentially disturbing, but honest depiction that everything we think, feel, and do is actually the result of simple biochemical and electrical connections from within. Are you ready to blow your mind inside out?
Oh, yes. I actually just watched Inside Out recently.
Oh, that's perfect. Were you like, was this kind of like a movie on for the kids and you were doing something, or were you like engaged in Inside Out? Have you really watched it?
The first time it was on, it was definitely just background. The second time, though, well, actually, the 40th time, it's been on a lot. And I'd say that I've probably seen it in chunks and probably seen about 80% of it in one sitting. So it's hard to sit down and just completely watch a full movie when the kids are awake. But yeah, I've watched a... watched it quite a few times.
Okay, well, out of all the Pixar movies, to be honest with you, that I consider truly exceptional pieces of content, it's WALL-E and it's Inside Out that are truly near and dear to my heart. WALL-E, it's an incredibly beautiful work of dystopian science fiction that does not pull any punches when it comes to how badly we're trashing the planet and how fat and lazy we're all going to be when we escape on some mega corporation cruise ship Starliner that ends up on...
by and large.
Dirk's DeviantArt. But it was Inside Out that was the second Pixar movie that truly blew my mind with more than just incredible imagery and storytelling. The mere concept itself is so brilliant and unconventional that Inside Out has its very own section in the Yuval Noah Harari book, 21 Lessons for the 21st Century.
Most mentioned man. He hasn't actually popped up in a while. I had to re-up on him a little bit.
Sandwiched between post-truth and education in chapter 18 titled Science Fiction, Yuval boldly writes, Disney loses faith in free will. Instead of summing up the plot of my favorite Pixar movie, in my own words, I'm going to let my favorite author do the heavy lifting for me.
And that's what we do here.
we outsource. It's just good space CEO Eve management.
We're contentologists, not writerologists. Give us a break, people.
Writerologists. That's a new one. I like that. On a side note here, when there's an intersection of my favorite content that has no clear or obvious relationship to another piece of my favorite content, it is a significant moment for a contentologist like myself. I mean, I'm sitting there, I'm reading this book out of left field. My favorite author, a historian, by the way, starts talking about the importance of science fiction as being the most important format of entertainment for the times to come. He mentions some of my absolute favorite movies, The Truman Show, The Matrix, which we've talked about on the show, and Inside Out. When that kind of stuff happens, it feels like a sign from the universe that I am on the right path to becoming a content Jedi master or something. Does that ever happen
to
you?
Completely agree.
Amazing.
Finding those like serendipitous connections. And I mean, it kind of like brings up our eternal debate of what sci-fi's influence is on the world.
Oh, yeah.
About how, you know, thinking about if sci-fi is influencing the thinkers of the future or if sci-fi concepts are inevitable. You know, its importance in the world, I think, you know, maybe I don't fall on one side of that argument or the other anymore, the more I think about it. You know, like I really think that sci-fi has its influences, but also some of these ideas are kind of inevitabilities. And it's just like the human will to explore and create is going to like, it's going to bring these things into existence almost whether we want to or not, because that's what humans do. We're just gonna continue innovating until we have the nice Wall-E trash mountains that Pixar is so fond of.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. I do feel like maybe our eternal debate that is as old as time itself has finally come to a close, like our one wheel and Yuval Noah Harari discussion.
well, we're not done talking about one wheels, all right?
Or Yuval. So another thing I like about this Inside Out section of this book, I mean, this is the only time I think I've ever seen Yuval Noah Harari, the Israeli philosopher, drop an F-bomb in his literature. So
he is human.
Here we go. In 2015, Pixar Studios and Walt Disney Pictures released a far more realistic and troubling animation saga about the human condition, which quickly became a blockbuster among children and adults alike. Inside Out tells the story of an 11-year-old girl, Riley Anderson, who moves with her parents from Minnesota to San Francisco. Missing her friends and hometown, she has difficulties adjusting to her new life, and she tries to run away back to Minnesota. Yet unbeknownst to Riley, there is a far greater drama going on. Riley is not the unwitting star of a TV reality show, and she isn't trapped in the Matrix. Rather, Riley herself is the Matrix, and there is something trapped inside her. Disney has built its empire by retelling one myth over and over in countless Disney movies. The heroes face difficulties and dangers, but they eventually triumph by finding their authentic self and following their free choices. Inside Out brutally dismantles this myth. It adopts the latest neurobiological view of humans and takes viewers on a journey into Riley's brain, only to discover that she has no authentic self and that she never makes any free choices. Riley is in fact a huge robot managed by a collection of conflicting biochemical mechanisms, which the movie personifies as cute cartoon characters, the yellow and cheerful joy, the blue and morose sadness, the red and short-tempered anger, and so on. By manipulating a set of buttons and levers in headquarters while watching Riley's every move on a huge TV screen, these characters control all of Riley's moods, decisions, and actions. Riley's failure to adjust to her new life in San Francisco results from a fuck-up in headquarters that has knocked her brain out of balance. Yuval, you dirty dog. To make things right, joy and sadness go on an epic journey through Riley's brain, riding on the train of thought, exploring the subconscious prison, and visiting the inner studio where a team of artistic neurons are busy producing dreams. As we follow these personified biochemical mechanisms into the depths of Riley's brain, we never encounter a soul, an authentic self, or a free will. Indeed, the moment of revelation on which the entire plot hinges happens not when Riley discovers her single authentic self, but rather when it becomes evident that Riley cannot be identified with any single core and that her well-being depends on the interaction of many different mechanisms. At first, viewers are led to identify Riley with the lead character, the yellow, cheerful joy. Yet eventually it turns out that this identification was the critical mistake that threatened to ruin Riley's life. By thinking that she alone is the authentic essence of Riley, Joy browbeats all the other inner characters, thereby disrupting the delicate equilibrium of Riley's brain. Catharsis comes when Joy understands her mistake, and she, along with the viewers, realizes that Riley isn't Joy or Sadness or any of the other characters. Riley is a complex story produced by the conflicts and collaborations of all the biochemical characters together. The truly amazing thing, Josh, says Josh in here, is not only that Disney dared to market a movie with such a radical message, but that it became a worldwide hit. Perhaps it succeeded so well because Inside Out is a comedy with a happy ending, and most viewers could easily have missed both its neurological meaning and its sinister implications.
Pixar really does know how to lay down some beautiful visual poetry, and they really know how to, like, take these complicated concepts and wrap them in like something that even a baby can understand. It's like with Toy Story, you know, it's just like the whole, like, I think it was the first concept the first cartoon I ever watched that had like a real sense of, I guess it would be existential dread, like with Woody coming to grips with like what he is and what his usefulness is and trying to figure out like what his life is going to be after his usefulness to Andy has expired. And, you know, that's like, they've just taken that kind of thinking and just bumped it up to not even 11. I mean, it's like, it's so far beyond that, like Inside Out is so complicated. And I love the imagery, like the train of thought is like a perfect example. That's like something that you hear all your life. Oh yeah, your train of thought, da 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 da, whatever. And then like they take that and create like a literal train in the movie, yeah, that like becomes such an integral part of the plot. And those things seem so obvious, but it really does take like a crew of geniuses like the Pixar creators to make that such a, you know, such a simple and marketable piece of this complicated story. It's really amazing.
It is absolutely amazing. And you know, on the Toy Story note too, I think Toy Story was actually the first computer generated movie.
But, the reason they made it Toy Story was because when they first created, and like the technology was so young and undeveloped, that when they created that, they couldn't really render human skin appropriately. And so they like minimized the humans in the movie and made the star of the show the toys, because like their primary rendering technology, like it looked very plasticky. So they just like totally leaned into that. And that's like just another genius decision right off the bat. You know, it really shows that these guys understood the limitations of their media, but also knew that it was going places like far beyond where they were now.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, just in the same way that they led the way with computer generated effects and with film and animation, they continue to not just push the limits when it comes to what's possible with images or what's possible with storytelling or character development, but like the concept of this idea, I mean, I realized how clever it was and how genius it was. And, you know, one of the favorite parts for me of the movie is this like post-credit scene almost, where you get the perspective, because you've been kind of in Riley's mind this whole time on this adventure. And then, you know, they kind of have this passing joke about there's this big red button that says puberty. And there's this passing joke like, huh, I wonder what this button does, like, because they're like, everything's fine and dandy now. We're all working together. Nothing is going wrong. And they're like, huh, what's this button here? 2020? No, but but
Happy New Year.
Then it's they show like inside of a dog's mind, and then inside of like a cat's mind, and then they have inside the mom's mind and inside the dad's. So you kind of get, you see like, oh, when a person gets more familiar with their emotional state, almost via mindfulness or maybe just maturity or self-awareness or whatever you want to call it, it's almost like they become, you know, their emotions are almost like a different personification or a different character, which I realize,
a different driver.
Yeah, they have a different driver, exactly, which I realize is, you know, maybe not necessarily exactly how, like, a neuron structure works or a brain works, but it's just like such a simple and elegant way to totally change like the typical Disney style animation, heroic, find yourself, we all have a authentic soul. And that's the brilliance that Yuval Noah Harari pointed out to me that I missed. It went over my head. Like, this is like some really serious content that Pixar dove into.
And I love how they show Riley's emotional development. And what really struck me about the movie was, you know, seeing this exact same timeline, maybe not quite as compressed as it is in the movie, but with my two daughters, of in the beginning, it's just joy in her head. And then there's like that moment where like anger comes in, and watching babies grow up, you really do see like where they, in the beginning, there's just nothing to be mad about, you know, and then anger comes in. And then as they start to become like a little bit more sure of themselves, they start to like, you know, they start to question themselves and they start to get like stress and anxiety and all these different complicated emotions start to develop, which I think they touch on really well in the movie. And it's interesting because that's like really what it's like watching a human mind develop. You really do see that as like a human becomes more intelligent and more self-aware, there's also like a lot of baggage that comes along with that. That is like kind of the definition of the human condition. You know, like the, you don't see your dog, you'll see sweet Mando worrying about how they said that Holland was a different place than the Netherlands, but you sure get that out of a human.
Oh God, that's so true. Well, I definitely want to touch more on these sinister implications because I think that that's really, really key to appreciating this incredible movie, especially as an
Pixar's
adult.
Bread and butter.
Yeah, and you know, for those that have watched Inside Out, for those that just really enjoy Pixar movies, like, I encourage you to watch this movie again. Bree and I must have watched this thing maybe seven times, and like you pick up some like layer of genius every time you rewatch it. And maybe, you know, after diving into some of Yuval's books, or just hearing my my theatrical rendition of his work, like maybe you'll find something else new. But on that topic of these quote unquote sinister implications, Yuval Noah Harari is extremely concerned with the quickly advancing artificial intelligence algorithms that are slowly putting together these accurate models of human behavior. The Social Network is a documentary that's really popular right now that I've thought about covering on this show because I thought it was fantastic and I thought it was, I mean, it is. It's must watch content. I think it's really important. But you've always been talking about this in his books, his articles. These models are, they're collecting data. They're learning the behavior of not just this collective humanity, but that is on the table as well. I mean, the frightening reality is these algorithms are able to predict individuals' behavior. Individuals. You, me. Probably not Mando because he's not on social media, but every single person that, you know, their shopping habits, their YouTube history, all kinds of this shit. And this knowledge, I mean, we're learning that this is actually being weaponized against us. It's being used to influence our behavior.
When the AI wakes up, it's going to be a marketing program.
I mean, whether it comes in the form right now of like targeted advertisement or influencing political elections, or the more concerning things that are right around the corner, like AI learning how to do your job better than you before replacing you, or an authoritarian government tracking your every move, interaction, emotion to predict and crush or maybe reprogram any form of dissension before it happens, like some sort of predictive mind reading thought control. I mean, the bottom line is humans are hackable. Like Riley from Inside Out, we are just a collection of cells put together in a peculiar way. Like Riley, our entire narrative experience is just this appearance into consciousness. I mean, are you happy? That's your Amy Poehler neurons firing. Are you sad? Phyllis Smith from The Office is in your brain. Scared? That's Bill Hader, SNL favorite. Are you disgusted? Mindy Kaling, welcome to the party. Because like Riley, the most likely scenario, according to the latest cutting-edge neuroscience, we, Josh, don't have a soul. And if that makes you a little bit angry hearing that, well, that's just your Lewis Black circuitry firing. Tried to get the cast in there, you know.
Perfect reference. Yeah, I've always been a little torn on the concept of a soul. I had a concept that I created, and it was it was just for like a, I don't know, I was like writing a comic book or something when I was younger, and I had this idea of an oversoul. And this is like, to me, this was a beautiful thought, and I would love it if this was true, but I can't really reconcile my cynical side with this idea and completely convince myself that the lights don't just go out. But my idea was that all living things essentially are part of what I called an oversoul, and it's our true form. And our oversoul is basically like a collection of our experiences. And the purpose of whatever this oversoul being is, was to incarnate in these different forms, gather experience as an ant or a human or a bird or some other alien creature. And then eventually at the heat death of the physical universe, when there's no more time to reincarnate, each oversoul is brought back together, and they have their collection of all of this corporeal knowledge, and then something, who knows what happens after. But I always thought that, you know, it kind of like that idea kind of ties in like the religious ideas of reincarnation. And it also, like, I love flying and skydiving and these things that just involves, you know, like falling and speed and deflecting air. And it just always made me think, like, yeah, that's, you know, it could be a holdover from my time as a bird. And it's just something that, you know, even though there's maybe this veil pulled over my eyes from the physical and non-physical realm, it's like a holdover that's like deep within my, I don't know, my electrical being, that I can't help but search those kind of experiences out while I'm here as a human. And that's something that's like, it's always kind of rattling around in my head a little bit.
Your Pixar characters are constantly talking about the oversoul concept, huh?
It's always in there, just a little bit in the back of my mind. And I would love if I could lean into that belief completely, but I don't know if I can quite convince myself to.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I am going to talk a little bit more about this, but I don't think a soul necessarily exists. I like the idea of it. I like the concept of it, but consciousness does exist. I mean, we are aware. We have awareness, and I'm not totally convinced consciousness doesn't exist outside of our brains. I mean, that is something where I think scientists are pretty stumped. There's like these three scientific questions that have never been answered, and I'm sure I'm going to get these wrong. I can't remember one of them, but one of them is, what happened before the Big Bang? The other one is, where does consciousness come from? And there's
why is the sky blue?
and why is the sky blue? That's it. Those are the three. But, you know,
what was the third one?
I don't remember. I'm just talking off the top of my head right now.
Maybe I nailed it.
Let me type it into Google real quick and see what comes up. Biggest questions in science. Oh, there's like 25 of these. It's not going to come up very easily because science has a lot of questions. But, you know, a soul is just a term, and maybe this oversoul concept is like still exists in some sort of stratum. I don't know. Who knows?
I mean, the soul is definitely a term that the complex human mind created to kind of try to come to grips with understanding its own nature.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
I think so.
It's very doubtful that dogs are thinking about souls. Like, that's a uniquely human invention. And, you know, the fact that it might also be a real thing is also very human because, I mean, we're good at conceptualizing things and we're good at discovering things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing I do know for sure, we all have this, the Lewis Black, the Bill Hader, the Amy Poehler, we all have these characters, and they were placed in our heads not by some powerful god or deity, but it was through hundreds of thousands of years of evolution and natural selection where these organisms that successfully avoided dangers like saber-toothed tigers and coronavirus-filled Trump rallies, and you know, they sought pleasurable and nourishing activities like eating fruit, maybe listening to this podcast to help attract a mate so they can pass on their genes. I don't know. I'm just thinking of historical organisms. But that is how we ended up with this star-studded cast of Pixar characters living inside us, controlling every single decision that we make. So the sooner that we can embrace this model, the inside-out model of the human mind, the sooner and the more effectively we can actually embrace the truth that we are just complex algorithms and we're totally hackable. And if we don't embrace the Socrates phrase, know thyself before it's too late, if we fail to understand the Pixar inside of us before the Facebooks and the Instagrams and the Googles and the Amazons, we might all be living in some form
of Yahoo.
Aldous. Yahoo. Yahoo News is out to get us. I don't think their algorithms are a threat. But honestly, I
just want you to get all the good all the good internet companies in there. Okay, continue.
Now I'm trying to think of a couple of more. Let's see, Ask Jeeves.
Ooh, Ask Jeeves. That DuckDuckGo.
Hey now, DuckDuckGo is actually a great service because they don't spy on us, at least not that we know of.
We're mentioning all the greats.
Encyclopedia Britannica.org.
Is that online now?
I have no
Anyways,
idea.
Continue with your thought.
So my concern is if we don't figure this shit out before they do, we might be living in Aldous Huxley's Brave New World sooner than we think. Programmed, controlled, and manipulated. So, in summary, that is what I got out of Inside Out. It is truly a beautiful, funny, heart-wrenching, and heartwarming must-see film. And as Yuval Noah Harari himself put it, it has some sinister implications.
You fuckers. That sounds just like Yuval Noah Harari.
He talks just like that. The fact that Riley Anderson and Neo Anderson, I don't know if you picked up on that, but that's why I said Anderson.
I got
it. That was a little Easter egg.
I'm a little bit of a contentologist myself.
I shouldn't have explained it. Yeah. I'm
so
not
I do
on
have
NZT,
a question
but
for
I,
you.
I picked it up. Shoot.
Yeah. I used my TDCS today. So do you think there's a way we can make our algorithms less hackable besides just not engaging with the Yahoo Newses of the world?
I don't know. I mean, I absolutely think so. Yes. But sure. I mean, absolutely. Like, for example, you can smoke cigarettes your entire life and then you can quit. And, you know, cigarettes, that drug nicotine is, you know, it's grooming your brain. It's hacking your ape wiring, but you can deprogram yourself. But, you know, there's this book that's on my list. I think it's called Atomic Habits, where he talks about, I actually haven't gotten to the book, but an interview with the author. He talks about how easy it is to pick up a bad habit and how hard it is to unlearn that bad habit. I mean, our bad habits usually come from that wiring of, like, you know, fat, sugar. It's rare in nature and it's a valuable resource for the 70,000 years we were living off the land in nomadic tribes. Now it's extremely plentiful in grocery stores near you. So, you know, these companies have figured us out quicker than we have figured ourselves out. But yeah, I think there's absolutely ways to do it. The problem is it's extremely difficult. It's extremely slow. I think Yuval's concern that he's brought up a lot is that, you know, these algorithms are so good at predicting, like, when you might buy something or when you might be tired and, you know, all the little triggers that make us want to pick up our phone or look at our screen and scroll to the next thing. I mean, it is like your little brain versus the world's greatest supercomputer. Like, the computer is going to win every single time. So, yeah, I think we can become less hackable, but we need to address it on a societal level, in my opinion. And, you know, I'm not going to be the guy. Like, we got to watch The Social Network. We got to read Yuval Noah Harari. We got to, like, see what's up with Pixar, whatever they're telling us. Like, we have to just be aware of the problem first.
Well, a lot of the drive towards hacking the human mind has been incentivized with things like Facebook and Instagram, Yahoo News, which we're both so fond of.
Ask Jeeves.
But those companies are like literally paid to try to like solve that problem, quote unquote, which I think the one of the best defenses that like an individual can have is just understanding that that's how those programs work. And it's like seeing someone on Facebook like arguing about politics. It's like something that disgusted me so much. It's literally like what shaped the way that now the way I use Facebook that we've talked about, you know, a few shows back, of just like blocking anyone that posts anything personal, because that's not what I'm there for. You know, I'm there for like content. But even with that, like, I'm still being hacked a little bit because those content creators are creating that stuff with the intention of selling something, you know, whether it's just the time that you spend viewing their videos or if it's they have a product associated with their content. So it's like it's very complex, and it's the kind of thing that's like so much easier to just like bury your head in the sand and be like, okay, I'll just watch all these Red Bull videos and just enjoy them for what they are. But, you know, in the end, you just like all of that is part of trying to elicit some sort of response out of the viewer.
Absolutely. And, you know, the plus side of this is, you know, I mean, content in a way is like excellent content captures our attention. But I think that there's a difference when you pay for it, like Disney Plus or Netflix or Prime Video, Amazon Prime. Typically, when you pay for a service and you don't get advertisers, like, I feel like the quality of the content is going to be a little bit more than when, you know, a just like clickbaity, you know, free quote unquote video platform that's trying to just like capture your attention and increase the length of time that you view whatever the medium is. You know, that is not free. You may not be giving them money, but they are selling your attention and they are collecting information about you to continue to build whatever model of prediction that they're, you know, whatever sinister implications, whatever sinister plans they have, because who knows where that data is going to go 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. Things are changing rapidly. And I think that, you know, I just want to get on the little content clearinghouse soapbox for a minute and just talk about what an issue I think this is. And all this from a Pixar movie, Inside Out.
You can always count on the Content Clearinghouse not trying to sell you on anything, but please share the Content Clearinghouse with all of your friends. Tell them that this is the greatest show you've ever heard. We would really appreciate that. We're not trying to manipulate you. We just really want to get those numbers up.
That's right.
Well, Brett, that was exactly what I would expect out of you talking about a Pixar film. Because you always bring the cerebral to the show. And, I mean, Pixar, it's like you said, it's like they're kids' movies. But really, I mean, they are designed to keep the adults that bring the kids to the theater engaged. And I know that, like, there are certain movies. I know you and I have had the debate about Moana being Pixar or Disney. But regardless, whichever it is, it falls into the same category.
It's
of
not Pixar.
An animated film that I will watch every time it comes on because it's just so great. It's just, it's like one of my favorite movies. And that is a movie that's like clearly marketed towards 5-year-old girls. But there's enough in there and enough in all of these films. Like Disney and Pixar both follow a very similar model where they will have these complex themes like layered under like the cute imagery. And, you know, this conversation, it did not go anywhere that I expected it to go. But that's exactly what I expect out of you whenever you bring something like this. And Inside Out is like a great example of just like one of the most cerebral Pixar creations that there are, that there is right now.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Josh, for listening. And thanks, listeners. Check us out on Instagram at The Content Clearinghouse. We're also on Facebook. The Content Clearinghouse is our page. You can email us if you are feeling a little crazy and you want to, I don't know, send us a suggestion or a note or maybe an emoticon. Your favorite.
That's a thing.
Internet links. contentclearinghouse@gmail.com. Our website, cchpod.com. Thanks again for listening.
And remember, no show for the next 2 weeks, folks, but stay tuned. At the beginning of the new year, January 7th, we're coming back with our 35th episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We love you guys so much.
Welcome to the Content Clearinghouse. I'm Josh Evans.
And I'm Brett Chisholm.
And on today's episode, we talk about spaceships of all shapes and sizes. Long, skinny ones, and short, hockey puck-esque ones. Seriously, it's like a tuna fish can. And after that, Brett fills me up with existential dread.
Oh, let me try that again.